Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Croak has returned to the Reduced Shakespeare Company, at least for this performance in Batavia. And can I just apologize in advance? I'm a bit on vocal rest. I've had this cold, and so that's my voice is so low.
Is that why you're wearing a knitted hood, red hood, and a scarf? Is that what that's all about?
Yeah, it's an affectation, but it's mine. Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 227, Sharing Lisa's Story. If you're a longtime listener of the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, you know who Matt Croak is. If you're a longtime fan of the RSC, you know who Matt Croak is. Matt Croak was the first American in this company and in this country to replace the beloved Adam Long in the Shakespeare Show, in the America Show. You were the first performer, along with Rita and myself, in the Bible, the Complete Word of God, abridged.
Right, and bringing back stories again of being backstage in Reston and somebody saying, there's someone to see you, and I saw her, and the door closed behind me, it was locked, and she said, well, you know, when I found out Adam wasn't here, I really hated you. And I'm going, oh boy, this isn't going to end well. And by the end, you were okay. So I had to deal with that for a couple years.
You know, and now people are saying that kind of stuff to Dominic Conti and Matt Rippey.
That's right.
You know, and Brent Tubbs and Dustin Sullivan. Well, you're no Matt Croak. Well, it's true. It's true. They can all sing. But
what the heck? Are we taking shots here?
Wow.
For a man who's on vocal and talent rest, if I may.
Let's go. It's
I know I've moved on because now people hate me for a completely different reason.
That's good. That's good. Change is good. Change is always good. But you have not been resting on your laurels, such as you've had a kind of exciting couple of years, and exciting is really not the best word for that.
Well, it's interesting. Is maybe a bad word too. But right, Lisa passed away 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and it basically changed the life and everything I did. I was someone who was on the road and who traveled, and now I had to be home taking care of three girls. That's right. The cosmic joke gets better. Three girls,
all under 10.
Yeah. 10, but at the time, 7, 3, and 5 months, and now they're 10, 5, and 3.
Yeah.
You know, and Haley's now, you know, getting to the age where she wants to talk about things, and I'm like, growing up, I'm growing up, I have questions, so, I'm trying to find that line of being there to say, yes, I want to hear it, and then when I hear it, going, don't panic, listen to what they have to say. So it's, you know, without a mother there, it's a little difficult.
They have a grandmother, they have aunts around, they have older women in their lives.
Yeah, and they have cousins and people who've really been, the support has been really good. So, you know, I've tried to take it a stance of there's no excuses. You know, if they know their life is not in chaos, I think that helps them. It wasn't so much that their mother died. It was that how is my life going to be completely chaotic? And I try to show that it's not. There are still rules. There are still procedures. And it helps. I mean, it's corny as it is. You know, it does help. When she passed away, the simple task of every night, brush your teeth, read a book, go to bed, was so that routine of, okay, there is order in our lives, we're young, and that was helpful.
Well, we did a podcast interview in, I think, the weeks or months after she had died, and that was kind of inspiring to so many of us, just how not only you dealt with it, but about how she was dealing with the process of knowing that this was going to happen and leaving her daughters. And it's been inspiring to kind of continue to hear what you've been doing since. But now you've embarked on this new project, which is very interesting.
I my brother sent me a journal when Lisa was sick and pregnant with cancer. At the time, we still thought she could beat this thing. So I kept it to kind of use it as an outlet. And then what I didn't expect is over the next 10 months, what transpired was that her mother, who we were also living with, her cancer came back. And Lisa, pregnant with chemo and the baby, and the next 10 months was just an array of events and challenges that I kept in a journal up until Lisa died. I stopped shortly after Lisa died, and then I sat on it for a while, and I kind of rewrote it, and kind of,
Can I ask you? What were the mechanics of keeping that journal? Did you make time for yourself every day? Was it something you did like before you turn the light out at night? Was it the first thing you did up in the morning? How did you just maintain the discipline corralling your thoughts?
It was a lot of hospital time. A lot of the journals I did while Lisa was doing chemo, which was 4 hours at a time, and I was there for her for that. Her mother was in the hospital for over 3 months before she passed away. They just tried surgeries and all that, and so I would be in the hospital, and I would do it there. A lot of docs, because that was the thing. We had doctor's appointments, then we'd have cancer appointments, then we'd have chemo appointments. Then literally, I would be in one section of the hospital, get a phone call, walk down the hall, down the steps, and into her mother's room. I mean, it was just back and forth in the hospital, and then
And Lisa was also pregnant, and,
right,
with Molly, and this was the other challenge.
Right. So Lisa's pregnant. So we had the doctor's appointment, then we had her cancer appointment, then her mother's cancer appointment. So I had a lot of hospital time, and then a lot of time, a lot of things that kind of shook me. There was a time when Lisa had a pacing syndrome, and she couldn't figure out what it was, and the doctors kept saying, "It's in your head. You're stressed out," and I was even saying, "Lisa, you know, you need to sit. You need to calm." And it turns out it was medical. There was something they gave her that does not react well, and she figured it out. She had to call the doctor, and she called someone else because no one talked to her, and they said, "Oh no, you got to stop taking that." And she let me off the hook there because I totally dropped the ball on that. And with everything she went through, she figured out her own problems, and so stuff like that kept me up late at night, and I journaled it.
We talked about that a little bit in the a couple podcasts ago about the just showing up. You know, actors have power, and patients have power as well. That had to have been one of the things that you guys discovered when you were deciding on your course of treatment.
Not only patients in there, it's a patient's game. Even afterwards, it took Haley, my oldest daughter, 11 months to say, "Miss Mom." I had to wait for that for 11 months. I wanted this thing to be done in a week. All right, let's go. Let's get all the grieving out. We're all unhappy. Let's move on with our lives. No, doesn't work that way. So for 11 months, and finally Haley was having a very bad day, and I didn't know what throwing, and I'm like, what? And then she just said, "I miss Mom." 11 months to hear that. Kelly was younger, and just that was a patient's game of every, for like 2 weeks at a time, she'd be at the dinner table and saying, "I don't want to die. I don't want to die," every night. And then something else. "When's Mom coming back? I know she's dead. When's she coming back?" So what I went through did teach me patience. And even Lisa being pregnant, she was losing 5 pounds a week. When she was 5 months pregnant, she was 18 pounds lighter than before she was pregnant. That's not a good sign.
No.
And a lot of this journal I wrote, this is, I don't know what's happening. So as I'm writing this, I don't know if the baby's going to make it. I don't know if Lisa's going to make it. I don't know if they're both going to make it. I didn't know. And so you just had to keep going and just not, there's choices through this whole thing. There are choices, and you have to get over, "I don't want this."
How did the journal help? Was it, and was it a pain to keep going, or was it a thing you kind of turned to because it was comforting or therapeutic?
It helped because I didn't understand it. There was so much being thrown at me. I had to write it down to see if this was really happening. I couldn't.
So it didn't make sense in your head until you wrote it down and were able to process it, kind of.
Right, because it's one of these things. A lot of people go, "Is that, wow, that's really happening, or that's quite a story?" And I go, "Yeah, is it happening?" And there was so much happening that I didn't know if I needed to know this later on. I didn't know if I had to have conversations with the girls later on. So I wrote it down just to have. And then the big question was, do I just forever bury it and leave it, or do I try to do something with it? You know, Molly's talked about a lot, and Lisa's pregnant, and Lisa, when being pregnant is one of the greatest joys of your life. And for Lisa, it was unfortunately a bit of a prison. This was her, now the cancer was estrogen negative, so the pregnancy wasn't fueling the cancer, but for Lisa, this was a difficult time.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if I wanted to put that in writing for Molly to see, but I ended up thinking about it, and as they grow, this is a story. They're gonna wanna know, and I'm not gonna be really good at making things up. So I decided to go ahead and you know, keep flushing this thing out.
Well, I find it hard to believe that you would be bad at making shit up, but nonetheless. So
I still do Santa Claus. I still don't know about Santa Claus, so I still have some. Yeah, I see. I'm not a total. Ogre.
I hope they don't listen to this podcast.
Yes, they do. Of course they do, Austin. Everyone listens to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast at ReduceShakespeareCompany.com.
See, you're making shit up right there.
Hey, this is Andrew Lupkus. I'm the guy who took Rippy and Mick Orff to get free beer and for Mick to flash everybody. And you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Well, this week, the week we post this, the week of April 11th, 2011, you can't see us live anywhere. You can see us on our YouTube channel. You can hear us, read our books and our scripts. But on May 20th, 2011, we begin our first ever national tour of New Zealand, a 12-city, three-week tour of Kiwi land, where Reed Martin, Dominic Conti, and I will perform completely Hollywood abridged.
Then Reed, Matt Rippey, Michael Faulkner, and I will perform the complete world of sports abridged at San Jose Rep in San Jose, California. That'll be the sports show's Bay Area premiere, and Michael and I will be trading off some of the performances. Then we leave San Jose and go straight to Washington, D.C. for a two-week run of completely Hollywood abridged, followed by a three-week run of the complete world of sports abridged at the Kennedy Center. Yes, that'll be 5 weeks at the Kennedy Center this June and July 2011. Tickets for San Jose Rep and the Kennedy Center are now on sale. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. We've got a new one coming out tomorrow. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
So you were writing in this, in the journal, keeping this journal for the last year or months of Lisa's life, and then you said you stopped keeping the journal and then came back to it. What are you doing with it now?
Well, I've had it for a while, and I didn't know what to do with it, and I was always just kind of playing around with it, and I saw in the Chicago Tribune, there's an article about this website called Kickstarter.com, and if you have a project, you can put it on Kickstarter and try to raise money. It's a fundraising effort, and people are having success with it. You have to put a dollar amount, and you have to put a time limit, and it has to get approved. So I thought, well, this is interesting. I had to move out of our house for logistical reasons, and I had to move into my parents' basement, which is, you know, another difficult change, but I thought, okay, well, trying to take good out of bad, I do have some extra time because I don't have a house to keep up. So the timing seemed right for it. So I submitted it to Kickstarter. They said, sounds good. I worked on it for like a week or two getting this up on the site to show people. And I launched it to say, look, I want to take my journal and I want to self-publish. But I'm at a point where I need help with editors, copywriters, kind of help the story along. I've reached a limit.
So you've written this, or you want to turn it into a book, and so the Kickstarter project is an attempt to raise the money to help you self-publish the book in a professional way to get it out there.
Yeah, to get the story out there, because ultimately, I think a lot of people, like you said, would come to me and say, I don't know, I can't even imagine what happened on a day-to-day basis with everything going on, and two women in the same house, both dying of cancer, the oldest sister mentally handicapped, we had to get placed in a home, not a home, but a real nice facility. A lot of people were surprised what had to happen on a day-to-day basis, and this is kind of an inside look, and it's a look because there are two other daughters I had to raise, and it's a story of contradiction. On the one hand, you have a woman who's doing everything she can to stay alive, and you have the husband who's in the position to do everything he can to make sure she dies peacefully. Those two don't always intersect very well, and there was decisions and conversations, and I hated being in a position where I had to look ahead, and I had to say, I want you here, obviously, but I have to see, what I didn't want to happen was it to be in a false sense of just think positive, and then the positive doesn't happen, and then I go through a series of, oh, I hate everyone, I hate the universe, I hate God, why didn't it happen to me? I want to say, this is life, it's happening, what happens next for the people who are still around? And it was a terrible position to be in, but you know what? Sometimes people are put in that position, and it is a choice, and we as a family made that choice to say, we're moving on. And I say as a family, Lisa was in our bedroom and she knew what was going on. And Haley came in and Haley went right up to her and said, Mom, are you going to die? Just came right out with it. And Lisa put her book down and she said, Haley, I hope not. But if I do, I need you to be strong. I need you to behave your sister. Gave her a whole litany of things. And Haley said, thank you, and walked out. And I'm just, I didn't know what to say. And she's just like, you know what? You guys need to know this. And Lisa started breaking down and crying. I mean, that were the choices that we made to do this. So it's a story of not just, oh my gosh, these horrible things are happening. It's a story of we're still trying to make a life.
Well, I mean, the expression is, boy, this couldn't have happened to a nicer couple. But it's true, and you guys are the nicest, liveliest, funniest couple we know, and all this shit is happening to you guys. I mean, can you use some of the Kickstarter money to go to a hypnotist, because I want to find out, and get regressed. I want to find out what kind of an asshole you were in a previous life.
Because I'm paying for it now.
So you are paying for it now.
I don't know. The money.
I'll say this. I mean, even for a guy like me who's not religious, but who I consider myself very spiritual, and they say, well, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, maybe there is a reason that this happened. I mean, maybe it happened to two good people who are articulate and funny and can get a little perspective. And maybe you sharing this story, sharing Lisa's story, is maybe that's the lesson to come out of it.
Well, I firmly believe in the alternative life nobody puts in tragedy. I mean, we all do it, where we go, whether it's on a small scale, we go, oh, if only this happened, I'd be better. But you never go, oh, but if that happened, maybe something bad would have happened there and my life would be worse.
Right.
And I don't know. Right. And I don't know what the whole thing at the end is. I don't completely understand it. So again, I had to make a choice. Am I all in, or am I going to try to point and say, I don't understand it, so I'm mad. I don't get it. I've got plenty of questions. Right. But you know what? I don't know what the alternative life is. I don't know what would have happened. All I know is what I have now. And once you get past the, okay, I don't want to have this, which a lot of people get stuck in, at some point you have to say, what do I do with it? And I found myself that a lot. Every time a new challenge came up, I said, okay, what do we do with it? You know, what do we do with it?
Well, one thing you guys did was leading by example, and I think this book is going to be able to do that, leading by example. You and Lisa came up to see us in Madison, Wisconsin, and this was just when she had been diagnosed with breast cancer the first time. And we went to a bar afterwards. We got our round of drinks. You raised your drink and you said, well, here's to Lisa's boobs. They gave a lot of, and she said, they gave a lot of people a lot of pleasure, but they're going away now. And I was dead there dumbfounded. Yeah. It's like, that you would say that it was, I mean, talk about black humor.
Yeah.
But wow. If that's the way you guys are handling it, how can we handle it? How can we fail to handle it any worse?
Well, she wrote a bit about it, too. She wrote a very funny bit she sent to her friend about, you know, losing them. And, you know, and she even quoted people, you know, Tom Johnson said, I'll miss those. They're very perky when they're 18. You know, she wrote this big thing about it. And it's interesting. You say, you know, well, are we here to handle this? We drew upon a lot of things. You know, even being in Clown College, in the circus, Steve Smith, who's the director of Clown College, you know, he says, and it's about clowning. But he goes, you know, some people think they're better clowns. And that's not what it's about. We do what we do until we drop, and hopefully we've left something behind. And it's as simple as that, almost. And it, you do what you do until you drop. I mean, that's right. What he feels. And you know, being with the RSC and just having this outlook of, you know, life and stuff like that. I mean, you do definitely draw upon what you've had from the past, and that plays a part of it. And yes, Lisa was definitely one who had that humor, and she carried that strength to where we are now. It's a big part of it is because of her.
So if people want to help, you know, contribute to this, to the self-publishing effort, to Kickstarter.com, what can we do to help?
Well, you go to Kickstarter.com. It's simple as typing in, I believe, either Matthew Croak, Sarah O'Kee, or Lisa Croak, and you'll see our project. You click on it. And basically, what the Kickstarter program does, it's run through Amazon payments. So if you have an Amazon.com account, you can easily contribute without giving up any information. And the Kickstarter, what they do is they give little rewards. You have to come up with rewards to give
you, people, meaning you.
Right, I do, right. Yeah. So I came up with some very simple things. For just $5, you get a PDF copy of the book, you know, emailed for $5 once it's finished. For $15, you get an autographed copy, you know, and it goes on. $25, you get a bookmark, or $25, I think it's autographed, $15 bookmark. So you keep them at small increments, and these people contribute. That way they're not, you know, giving, you know, thousands and they're on the hook. Yeah. And then we raise the money, and we make this thing happen. And the more money I make, even if I go over my goal, we get it more professionally done. I can hire editors and designers and get some hard covers done, and
you can publish more.
And we can publish more, right? Yeah, and we can make this story as professional as it can. So you basically go to Kickstarter.com, type in our name, Croak. You know, I think even Matthew types it in, mm-hmm. and see it. And if you feel like, just in the minimum's $1, you know, even $1, you know,
every little bit helps. Give till it helps.
Yeah, Kickstarter is, like I said, even for the, you know, artists out there, you know, it's a way to raise an alternative. It's called group funding, and you'll see plenty of projects out there, and they have to be a project. Whether it has to be art, literature, film, it has to be something. Can't be a business, can't be a non-for-profit. It has to be something someone's doing. It's a cool site. You see people who are making a CD and need $400. You know, you see people who are making a film, you know, and they need, you know, $20,000. I mean, it runs the gamut, and there's some really cool people. And there's a girl who had a really cool voice, and for $5, you get her CD. I mean, it's just how cool is that? It's a great site.
Well, I hope you're going to get in some of this book, in addition to being a, oh my God, how do you deal with a wife who and a mother-in-law who dies of cancer and leaves you with three daughters? I hope you're going to get in some of Lisa's humor because, you know, really, she was your better half.
She was my better half, right? And I hope the tone does show that. It's going to be challenging to touch on this subject and yet show the humor and what we had and the people. And I think us just being around and what we did with the kids is a testament to Lisa.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. If you'd like to help share Lisa's story, donate to Matt Croak's Kickstarter project. Go to Kickstarter.com, type in Croak, C-R-O-K-E, and read more about his project and watch the video of Matt and his daughters. Then you can send us your stories via email to feedback@ReducedShakespeare.com. You can also post comments on our website podcast page, and you can also post reviews at our podcast page on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a Twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Nobel Prize ignored author for literature Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. A random fan shout-out that this week goes to Amanda Ernest. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Andrew Lupkus, and thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 227,681st of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
It's great that you're here, if for no other reason than Reed Martin finally has somebody to talk about fantasy baseball with.
Well, and this is bad, because not only are we doing fantasy baseball, we're doing simulated fantasy baseball. So this is a program, DMB, Diamond Mine Baseball, where you draft players and you run a sim game based off last year's stats that apply to this year, hence thus for subtracting the stats from the other stats, and then the guy who comes with the highest rating goes there. And it's all very exciting. As you can tell, riveting, just riveting.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.